it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tonight, Predators in Washington to take on the Capitals. Puck drop slated for 6:30 p.m. our time. I'll have pregame for you at 5:30. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. That's on the radio side of things. On the television side of things, it'll be on NBC Sports Network, which is why Willie is next to me today on radio, because Fox Sports Tennessee will not be airing the game. It'll be NBC Sports Network, and the man who'll be on the call is our next guest. Mike Tirico is on the line. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great. You know, we haven't had a chance to see you do a lot of hockey, so have you enjoyed it?
Well, there would be a good reason for that, because I haven't done a lot of hockey.
Yeah, I know. Was it last year, your first year? Is that right?
I had never done it before. Truth be told, a couple of years ago, during the Preakness, as hockey fans know, Eddie Olczyk, our lead analyst, is a great handicapper of the horse races as well and works on our Triple Crown coverage. And I've always been a big hockey fan from growing up in New York as a kid. And we were watching the hockey, and I'm so into him picking Edzo's brain constantly about the playoffs and what's going on and lines and can they do this and do that and styles and all that junk. And so we're sitting there, and one of our executive producer for the entire network, Sam Flood, we're sitting there, and the challenge went out. Like, could you do a hockey game? We're like, sure. Yeah, and you're never going to back down from it. So about 4 months later, like, okay, hey, we got a few on the schedule for you. Like, okay, we're going to find out if I can or not. So I did three last year, including a playoff game. I loved it. I had a blast. I get a chance to do a couple of games here, starting with this one tonight. So we're looking forward to it. We're over at the arena. The Preds didn't skate, as you may know this morning, but they were over there playing soccer in the back, as usual. We talked to John Hines for a bit. Very interesting time and a very important stretch here for the Preds. And Willie's getting ready for the West Canada trip coming up starting next week. It's going to be really an important run for this team to see what February and March are going to look like.
Yeah, nothing like Canada in February.
Yep.
Dress warm.
Canada in January was quite cold. It was minus 32 just a couple weeks ago when we were at Edmonton. So we got that going for us.
And didn't upon return to Nashville, it was like almost 100 degree difference in temperature from when you took off to when you landed?
Yeah, you've done your homework. That's exactly what we were. It was almost exactly 100 degrees difference from the time we took off to the time we landed.
Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, that should be right around the time where it's ridiculously cold. So enjoy that three-game stretch out there. But it is beautiful. You can say that.
Yep. Two years ago, Mike, the two of us were in Winnipeg when the Predators played them in the playoffs. And
yeah.
It was second round. That was probably what, Willie? Early May? Is that right?
Yeah, late April, early May.
Yeah. And it was still freezing cold up there. Not to that level, but it was still cold.
I remember watching a bunch of that series because a forward, not a top six forward, but a next six forward for the Jets, Andrew Kopp, who has been there, God, I think for about 6 years now. Andrew went to the same high school that my son did in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I've watched Andrew from when he was a high school football quarterback as a freshman all the way through. So I keep a close eye on the Jets during the year. And that was a heck of a series, obviously, with Nashville and Winnipeg. But I do remember that was a second rounder early May, right around Derby time. I actually remember watching that game in the place where we usually watch hockey playoffs over in Louisville. So fun times. And, you guys have been regulars in the playoffs. And, I'll never forget the loudest building I had heard since doing NBA games at Arco Arena in Sacramento with that corrugated metal roof were the games that I went to. I went to the game in the finals, brought my son down to Nashville for the finals games, and that was the loudest I've ever heard any building. I was there, and everybody was standing, and I'm like, okay, great. We'll get to the first TV timeout. This is awesome. Now we'll sit down, enjoy the game, get to the first break under 14. And then everybody stands back up. I go, okay, so we're in this for the whole game. I got it now. And, man, it was a great, great atmosphere and a great building. And, candidly, we're missing a little bit of that because the team isn't giving the fans something to get off their feet and cheer about.
Yeah. Who gave you tickets, Charles Barkley or Nick Saban? Which one?
No.
Because they were both here.
Even better, my boss is at NBC. So that worked. it was the right time to work in the right place.
Well, you've done a lot of different sporting events. What was the biggest challenge, Mike, kind of gearing up to start doing hockey games?
Yeah, well, I mean, for Willie and, you know, for the guys like Doc Emmerich and Kenny Albert and everyone else, look, we all have sports that we do, and you know that there's nuance involved in it, and there's comparative difficulties in each sport, whether basketball, it's your proximity to the court, the relentless night in, night out of the NBA. For football, it's the scheme and trying to understand personnel because there are so many guys coming in and out. So each one has its own unique set of difficulties. In baseball, it's how much do you talk, how much do you lay out, all that. I've got to tell you, hockey's the toughest. I have such a respect for Willie, for, like I said, Kenny and Doc and all the people who do this on a night-in, night-out basis, John Forslund. It's hard as heck, man. It is hard because of line changes. You know, the second period the other night, John Hines just put the defensive pairs in one of those lotto drums, and it was just kind of, all right, we're going to start this period. We'll throw Yossi and Fabro out there. You know, so all those things, you get in a pattern, but you can't be in a pattern. Your identification has to be instant. In a fast-moving game, you almost have to be ahead of the play. So it's a unique and very, I would say, out of the ordinary challenge for play-by-play guys to keep up with the speed times the personnel changes that happen as the action's going. It's a big challenge. It's a lot of fun. I'm sure it's going to take me at least a period or so to get back up to speed tonight, but that's okay. We'll figure it out anyway.
Mike Tirico on the line with us. Last thing on my end before I flip this over to Willie. I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the big story that came out on Sunday and Kobe Bryant, and certainly your history with calling the game, and I believe you were on the call for his final game, the 60 points, right?
I was. The game aired on ESPN. It was kind of surreal in 100 significant ways because of the things that were said and Kobe not being with us anymore and his daughter being at the game. It was also a little surreal to me because I was sitting back next to my partner, Hubie Brown. I've almost 3.5 years since I left ESPN for NBC. And, you know, kind of be back on ESPN and calling the NBA again. It was just kind of odd and just a shock to the system, like the whole thing was. But that night was that night may in some ways encapsulate what Kobe was all about. The Lakers ended up that year 17-65. It was the worst season in Lakers history, which followed the prior season, which was at that point the worst season in Lakers history. They brought a Hollywood Finals-type energy to the building that night. Kobe, you know, we didn't know how many minutes he had in him because it was a breaking down at the end. And he put on a show. He took 50 shots to score 60 points. It was an incredible performance. And if you didn't know the work ethic, the passion, the desire of greatness that Kobe Bryant was motivated by, if you just saw that game, you'd say, wow, this guy's wired a little bit differently than everyone else. And it's a tragedy for all the other families involved and the other seven that we didn't know and didn't have this human connection to. But for Kobe and his daughter to be there going to basketball and travel basketball and everybody who has a kid who's involved in sports has been traveling by a different mode of transportation in all likelihood. We could all relate. It all felt so very real to us. It's just been really a surreal and awful couple of days, to be honest.
Mike Tirico is with us from NBC. He will be on the call tonight on NBC Sports Network, Predators and the Washington Capitals. And Mike, you've got a great perspective for this question, but it sort of dawned on me, and Darren was watching the same tennis match. There was a gentleman from the Nashville area, born and raised here, that was playing Roger Federer, and he had 7 match points.
Yeah, no.
And
oh, yeah.
Federer saves them all, and he goes on. He's injured. He's battling through, and he wins the match in 5 sets. But it dawned on me that is the kind of characteristic that sets apart the truly great athletes like Kobe Bryant, and Federer would be one of them. And you've got a great perspective. You call these different sports, so you rarely see that kind of greatness. And so that's the kind of thing that separates them.
You're right on. That's exactly it. And that's what kind of comes to mind as you're talking about Kobe this week. There's not a drastic difference between most of the athletes at the elite professional level. there is some, but there's not a significant one, okay? I think that margin of difference in talent just shrinks when you go from high school sports to collegiate sports to professional sports. But when you see the guys who separate to the 0.0001% of the top, the all-time greats, you just see a different gear. And I think this social media time, this time where more sports are out and available, and there's more big sponsorship opportunities, so big names like Nike get athletes involved in certain causes or getting athletes involved together. We've seen a whole generation of Federer, Kobe, Serena, all those in that ilk in hockey, Ovechkin here. You see them meet each other and have this incredible respect for each other. You saw Novak Djokovic get very emotional during the Australian Open this week on court talking about Kobe and the friendship that they had made. You've heard all these women's basketball players talk about Kobe's interest in their sport and how they do and always being available for them as his daughter's building this career. They all can speak the same language that's a little bit different because they are relentless. And there was a story told the other day about a player who played very limited time in the NBA and then eventually was Kobe's teammate. And he was in there shooting, and he was, like, shooting for 2 hours. And Kobe was still out there on the floor at the other end, and he kept going and going. And they finally asked Kobe, do you remember that day? And Kobe said, yeah, I kept going because I wasn't gonna leave while you were still working. I wasn't going to let anybody outwork me. And that's what made Kobe Bryant, in addition to being a great player, an all-time legend.
Well, another segue, I guess, with the Titans season. Of course, you're heavy involved with the NBC coverage of the NFL. The Titans get eliminated by Patrick Mahomes, and he played almost dead letter perfect to eliminate them. He's had an unbelievable postseason. So many people looking forward to seeing him on the biggest stage, because he might have a chance, who knows, it's early, to become one of these guys that we're talking about. But give us your thoughts on this matchup.
Yeah, it feels that way a little bit. You know, I got busy with some other stuff last week, and the last couple of days have gone so fast. I really have wanted to go back and watch the AFC Championship game one more time, because at 10-0, I was like, you know, I did the Titans-Patriots game on national radio. So I had seen the Titans and prepared for that game, and I was not shocked that they won. We were talking about it going in, that if you could strip the uniforms and the history away from the Patriots and you just prepared for the game, you thought the Titans were the better team. And then we see them in the next round with Baltimore, and then it's 10-0. Like, okay, this is real now. This is they can do this. And I want to go back and watch the Titans' third and fourth offensive possession of that first half, because I just felt like, after Kansas City scored, maybe it wasn't the play calling, maybe it was just execution, maybe it was the defensive adjustment, but it felt like the game quickened and Tennessee couldn't keep pace with the quicker game. And I bring all of that up because I think that's what I'm looking for in this game. San Francisco wants to keep the ball for 8 minutes, make you miserable, and just 3 yards, 5 yards, 8 yards, first down, run, better on the offensive line, all that stuff. When Kansas City does have success, and you think they will have a little, what does that do to San Francisco? Is San Francisco disciplined enough to keep working at what has been working? That's one big thing. And then the other factor, guys, I think San Francisco is going to need to throw to set up their run. And I think Kansas City is going to need to run to set up their throwing. And I think both teams get back to what they do best by what they do poorest offensively. And the one who can execute in that phase of the game, I think, is the team that walks away with a win.
Mike, if you got time for one more quick one, I was reading a bio of yours. This is a fun one for Darren and I, because Darren and I can remember vividly, this would have been like 16 or 17 years ago, we were doing a show. We were fortunate enough to get Bob Costas on our show, thanks to our colleague Pete Weber, who you'll be alongside tonight.
I saw Pete this morning.
Yes, I'm sure you did. And so we were so excited. We probably spent all day trying to figure out what we're going to ask Bob Costas, right? I noticed on your bio, because you have the connection at Syracuse, you were doing a radio show, and your first guest was Bob Costas. I can't imagine what that was like for you. But what were the questions you asked him?
Oh, God. Well, we were in Syracuse, so we were able to do some reminiscing on Bob's path, Bob's days as a minor league hockey announcer in Syracuse, where they were never given a roster of the second team, where they came out in all different uniform numbers, and Bob picked a certain player, and that player had the greatest night of his life, even though he didn't know it. Because he was passing to himself, he was setting himself up, he was forechecking, he never came off the ice, and one of those deals back in the day when you could make stuff up and nobody would be noticing. But Bob's become a friend because of our Syracuse connection, and you couldn't ask for anybody to be more gracious as he ended his run at the Olympics in terms of being supportive of what I was going to do. And, you know, you don't replace a Bob Costas. You're the next guy who has the job because he's irreplaceable. And he has been nothing but good. And as a matter of fact, we exchanged. We saw each other Wednesday of last week in New York at the memorial service for David Stern. And we exchanged text messages on Sunday after the Kobe thing, because Bob happened to be on CNN. I was on NBC doing stuff. And we were just talking about how, you know, it's just so awful to be there talking about all that stuff and just didn't seem so real. But Bob's become somebody who I've loved talking to. The coolest thing, guys, working at NBC at this time was to be around Bob and to be around Al Michaels, two guys who I've idolized and looked up to, and now they're teammates. They have been teammates. You work on the same shows as them, and just to sit and hear their stories of the Miracle on Ice and all that other stuff, it's been one of the great parts of my career to be able to enjoy this kind of run right now.
Mike, if you see Pete again, you can ask him about, what was it, 18 years ago, Willie, the three of us. It was April. We left Tigers opening day at Comerica versus the Twins. The three of us, or Willie and I and Pete Weber, were walking to the streets headed to the Joe to see the Predators and the Red Wings that night. And Pete was telling us such great stories that I almost lost my head with a street sign.
Yeah.
You can ask. He loves that story.
Okay. Yeah, walked right into a street sign.
Walked right in, and I thought I lost my head.
Yeah, Pete is that compelling of a storyteller.
He's still mortified to this day that I didn't lose my head. I wasn't decapitated.
That is funny. I will ask him about that. You know, Joe Louis Arena is now, I don't know, when the Preds came through Detroit, I'm not exactly sure, but Joe Louis Arena is about half torn down. They are in the process of deconstructing that thing, and they're going to do some development on that site in a little bit, but now, the new arena's been up for a couple of years, and it's a really nice building. But they're also reconstructing the hockey team, too.
Yeah, no kidding. Very good point.
They're last place in the league, which is kind of odd to see after all the years of their successful run and a quarter century going to the playoffs. But this happens. It's cyclical, and that's why I'm interested to see how the Preds are going to handle this stretch here. It's a huge game. You hate to say at the end of January these games are big, but – man, you're going on that West Coast trip. You got Vegas coming in on Saturday. It is not easy for the next half dozen games, and you have to get back in the mix before too long. There's just too many teams between you and that last wild card spot at this point.
Why couldn't the Red Wings be like this back when they were in the Predators division instead of winning cups?
Exactly. Hey, a lot of us in Detroit, I've lived there for 20-some-odd years, a lot of us in Detroit spent a lot of April and May nights up at midnight, 1 a.m., because it seemed like the Red Wings always draw a Pacific time zone team in the playoffs. And I swear, worker productivity had to stink around Detroit for stretches in April and May because of that.
Mike, good stuff. Really appreciate the visit, as always, and have fun tonight calling the game between the Capitals and the Predators.
I'll do my best. At least I know we've got the Nashville audience. They won't be tuned over to listen to you, Willie, but that's all right. enjoy the work you guys do. I look forward to catching up with you down the line.
Thank you, Mike.
You'll do great.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
All right. That is Mike Tirico, NBC play-by-play man. And, of course, as you just heard,
he's really good.
NBC Sports Network tonight, Predators and Capitals, 6:30 puck drop. We'll come back, wrap up the show next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.